I'm Fathery.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Brandy.
And how do I look?
You look strong. You look healthy.
Perfect. That's what I was going. Actually, I was going for confident, but in a creepy way, but I'll take
what I'm yeah.
All right. Well, let's do this thing. Text Trek, drawn to Trek. Y'all know the drill. Hit it.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 266th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek old and new.
And the 22nd episode of Drawn to Trek, a Star Trek animation podcast from Trek Geeks. And I have a cold, so I'm just like a little behind on everything.
But yeah, it's a big week, a season finale. So the last episode of new Star Trek we're going to get this year and for who knows how long.
It's sort of like a little bit of a respite for content creators, though, I guess. You can kind of look at it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it in some ways it's kind of a problem when there's no new Star Trek coming out. Because like at least if there's like a new episode every week, I don't have to worry about like what to do. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, now I know what to base my entire week around.
Yeah.
So I guess the uncertainty is what frightens me in the dark times between the shows. But such is life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're drawn to Trek. We've got a couple fun ideas, so we're going to start planning those out.
Yeah, so be sure y'all are like following us on the socials. I know it's harder with the destruction of Twitter, but
yes,
we'll still have some fun stuff coming out in the near future. So
that's my thought, Brandy. Yeah. The look that Brandy gave me is my thought about Twitter.
Mm-hmm. It's basically
that's a lot of things beyond just Twitter. I guess there's a lot of things that have that expression over these days, but.
Yeah, most of them are social media things for me. It's just, I'm tired. I don't have time to keep up with all that. I just don't.
It's so hard because, like, I'm like, do I have to, like, put, I never use social media now because I'm like, I'm going to have to write this on 5 different places. It's just easier just, like, to not write it and just feel lonely and out of touch with everyone.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. I am an introvert, so that's kind of my base setting. Don't want to connect with people. Just leave me the hell alone for a bit.
Didn't there used to be something like, I think it was Friend Feed or something like that, where you could put it in one place and it would disseminate to all of your different socials or something like that?
I don't know, but I wish to hell someone would like develop that technology now, because I really need something like that. So if there is an option like that, please people tell me. But yeah, we'll talk about the season 4 finale, Old Friends, New Planets, written by Mary Darman and directed by Bob Suarez in just a minute. Before we get into that, I just need to do a little bit of quick housekeeping and thank the wonderful Text Trek Patreon supporters. It means a lot to us when you're able to chip in with a monthly contribution like that and helps us keep doing a weekly live show. And to celebrate, we like to do a monthly watch party. So on November 18th, because Thanksgiving here in the United States, there might not be any new Star Trek that week, but we'll be watching old Star Trek with Charlie X, one of the rare time, maybe the only time Thanksgiving is ever mentioned in all 900 plus episodes of Star Trek. So
yep.
That's kind of cool. I like that episode too. I'm a big TOS fan, so I think that'll be fun. We haven't done a TOS one in a while.
Nice.
I think Thanksgiving, yeah, I don't know if it's mentioned anywhere else. I know in TAS they have the Salem Witch Trials, so you get sort of pilgrims, and that's about it.
Yeah. Sort of pilgrims. I like that.
That's not
like
quite
that description.
The same.
No.
That's pilgrim adjacent.
Yes, there you go.
So it's Thanksgiving adjacent.
Yeah. That would be more like Halloween, nice. I guess, actually.
Yeah, that'd be a good one for Halloween. But yeah, there's not like a lot of news this week. The actor's strike is still, it sounds like there's a lot of pressure to get that resolved, but still striking. So for yet another week. I thought we were going to have it solved before November. So
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The studios just want to starve all of the actors out, basically, so that they'll give in and agree to let them use their images and AI and crap. And that's not going to fly. That's not going to fly. I'm sorry. They're not ever going to give in on that. And so, you know, the studios are going to be the ones who get starved out, not the actors. Because they are united and they are strong and they should get what they deserve.
It feels like they'll just create their own system if you know, they continue like, fine, we'll just create our own studio system.
Well, and for the most part, it sounds like they've caved on a lot of things. It's like kind of right now it's more like the details, like, you know, streaming residuals and stuff like that. They're trying to iron out. So it is frustrating. But yeah, the studios have been. It's like if we could have avoided like all of the strike if they would have just gave like the writers what they were asking for at the very beginning, and it would have saved a lot of people a lot of heartache. But
yeah,
greed. It's all down to greed and power. That's all it is.
But I guess Rod Roddenberry maybe found his dad's 3-foot Enterprise model. So
that's pretty.
We got that piece of news. So more to come on that.
Yeah, my friend Greg was actually like one of the first people to find the listing, and I was at a Halloween party, probably where I got sick, watching Attack of the Killer Clowns from Outer Space from 1988, that crazy fun, and I just like after a while everybody notices that I'm just looking at my phone and they're like, what's going on? it's like they may have found the Enterprise model. I'm just like looking at it, and just it seems very there's only one weird thing that I can't figure out. It's like the wood grain of the plaque on the bottom seems reversed, like it's a mirror image, like from like that's not possible the way it is though. So I don't know, they could have also replaced the plaque or the wooden base, and I think it's plumbed for electricity, which it wasn't originally. So but that feels like something that people would have done like after the fact, like, oh, they've got this model, now we're gonna put some lights in it or whatever.
But it was a like screen used prop. It appeared
like 3-foot model. Yeah,
like it was when the Enterprise got shrunk.
Yeah.
And Kirk is like looking, you see, have Kirk's face on the view screen, right? When he's like looking into it. That was the 3-foot model. And then there's like the publicity pictures of Nimoy and Shatner with it before the show aired.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember that one.
It's a pretty ancient Star Trek relic. It's been around since before the original series aired, I guess. So.
Unfortunately, the person who put up the listing is not responding to people anymore. So. We're hoping that it's not like being held hostage or something like that.
let's everybody check their emails for a hostage note from the 3-foot model of the Enterprise. And if you get any messages from the 3-foot Enterprise, make sure you ask them, are you okay? And hopefully, you know, they'll be able to respond in some kind of code that we'll understand, like system malfunction. You know, I don't know.
Kirk is a jerk.
Kirk is a jerk. That's the one. That's the one. That's the one.
That's the code word. That's the code phrase we're looking for. Yep. Well, maybe someone will just have to like steal it and run off with it, like Mariner with the Genesis device.
So awesome.
That was a fun scene. The whole it all just feels like a movie. It was done. That second part really felt cinematic. Now I've just started diving right into the discussion. Sorry.
No, it's beautiful.
There's not much else for news. So yeah, we can get into this episode. I can recap it by reading the official synopsis and then expand on that with spoilers as per the usual tradition. But the season of Lower Decks, Aaron and I have been noticing that these synopses have been very intentionally vague. It almost seems as if the people working on Lower Decks are kind of like annoyed marketing keeps, you know, like wanting to like market the show to be like show off, you know, things. So but they don't
listen to them sometimes. It's like they'll put more stuff out there than the directors and the creatives want to, because it's like that happened last year. I think
they didn't this week. This is the synopsis right here. Y'all ready for this? Okay. Mm-hmm. Big spoiler warning, this is going to give away a lot, but an excellent season finale delivers plenty of laughs while tying up all the important plot and character arcs.
That's almost a comedic like bit in itself.
Yes.
That sounds like it was written by AI.
That too, yeah.
It sounds like it was written by like a writer who like, I don't want to describe this episode. I just want you to go watch it for yourself.
That's what they just should have done. Go watch it for yourself. That should have been the synopsis. That would have been fine.
Great.
It's the second half after part one last week and the cliffhanger with Nick Locarno and Basically, he wants to do Nova Fleet and has a Genesis device, which we know is that's kind of like a big, powerful weapon. And Mariner's like, no, that's too dangerous for you to have. I'm going to go blow it up. And he's like, I'll kill you to stop you from doing that. And she's like, no, you won't. My mom will beam me back over to safety. And Nick Locarno just blows up by himself, kind of like Khan. A lot like Khan, actually.
So much like Khan. In fact, that whole thing in the Nebula was so very Khan. Even the music, even the visuals.
It's like a shot for shot in some places. Mm.
Oh, I know. I loved it. I loved it.
Put them next to each other and they'd be moving at the same pace and everything. Yeah.
Yep. Brandia, since you loved it so much, why don't you give the first of our opening statements, just kind of give your broad impressions on the episode as a whole, and then we'll get into more details later in the episode breakdown.
Okay, broad impressions. I loved it, obviously, and I especially appreciated because I knew it was going to get said, but I like the way they did it, and that's, you know, he looks just like Tom Paris. No, I don't see it. Seriously, they have the same face. They're like identical. Nah, I still don't see it. Yes, I love
that. The fact
that
they broke it into two pieces actually made it funnier, too. Because it's like, they're going to mention it once, but then it comes back. So it's like,
Yes. Yeah, I appreciated that. And I loved how that was handled. Shannon Phil coming back. Damn, that was amazing. I was crossing my fingers. And the animation was absolutely spectacular. In this episode, the nebula, that area where there were all the ice crystals, the giant ice crystals, the ships. Oh my gosh, all the ships. So much ship porn for Brandy. So those are my general feelings.
We even have a new class of micro steam runner or whatever. It's got a different name now. I can't remember, but it's
small steam saber runner.
Saber runner. Yeah. So it was all just very exciting. And, you know, they stuck the landing for me. They really did. So, but when have they not on a season finale? Not yet. So, and probably not ever, I hope.
That's cool. For me, I was really on board with the cliffhanger in last week's episode. And I like, I guess, most of the stuff that we got here that responded to the setup there. I just... In the second half of this episode, it got too into the Wrath of Khan. It felt like I've seen that movie homaged so much, and it's like, this is cool, but like, did we really have to do like Mataara Nebula again? Like,
I think it's time to retire that now. This can officially be the last time. Yeah,
like when they were like in the ice ring, you know, like when they were like flying around like the ice crystals and stuff. I almost wish like the climax had taken place there instead of the Ion Storm, just so it would have been a little more visually different. Maybe you could do something cool with like the ice ring and like the Genesis device like going off. Maybe you could like pull like the ice down onto the planet or make that in the oceans, or I don't know, maybe that could have been like a cool thing in animation, but they didn't do that. But the overall story of just like Nick Locarno, just basically like he was still only looking out for himself, and I kind of like that being like the villain of the story. But I kind of like that idea of like, oh, just you know, we're like a fleet of equals. It's like, that is kind of like a cool notion. Like, I kind of get like that that idea of like, yeah, like maybe we shouldn't all just, you know, agree to like this hierarchical structure. Maybe we should do something like a little bit more equal. So I kind of wish that they had like framed things a little bit more of like Locarno's ideas and stuff like weren't bad. It's just he had selfish motivations. I just kind of it is in there if you're looking for it.
But seemed to be like there's no social engineering of that situation. It was like, we're going to take all these people that don't normally get along and throw them together and they'll get along because they're lower decks. Like, no, that's not how that works.
Yeah. But my hope is that we might see more of those other people. There might be something in season 5. So some of my opinions on that stuff is going to be kind of like yet to be determined. But overall, as far as like concluding the season long story and giving us like a satisfying ending with that, you know, we could, I guess, have like another cliffhanger with like, you know, Tindy's gone now. Like that stuff like really worked and connected. In fact, I'm like really emotional whenever I watch like the end, like it gets like the end credits. So I'm like, yeah, Tindy, you got this. But I'm like, yeah, she's going to be back in like one, maybe two episodes tops. So then and I was like, well, but I mean, who wants her to stay gone, right? We want her back on the ship. So everyone knows the show is always going to kind of pull itself back to some level of normalcy. Probably. And then I have like some more thoughts we'll get into later on. But Aaron, what about you? What was kind of your general reaction?
Pretty much everything that everybody said. And I also like that Tom Paris.
They're identical.
Yes. he seems to be like, now when you look back, it's like, oh, that's the logical bad guy. It just sort of really makes sense with the, you know, with the Lower Decks, and it ties back to the episode Lower Decks and everything. And just, it also feels like it's a nice, this is where Mariner could have gone, but didn't. So it's sort of like this nice diverging path. And I think it's like, you get to see how much she's changed based on how much, you know, like how she just completely reacts to him. So I thought that was great. I love the ice nebula thing. We mentioned that it's like, we wondered if the screeners were a little bit delayed because they were still working on the animation for that, because it was so fantastic. And I know they've done that up to, in the past, where they've like, we're polishing it right up to the last moment. It also reminded me of Star Tours a little bit, where they're flying through the ice thingy. Yeah.
Yep.
The ice thingy.
That's what it is. The ice thingy.
That's the Star Wars ride. Right.
Yeah.
The Star Tours.
The original version. I don't think it's in the newer ones.
I never did the original. Yeah. So I guess now I can't. I guess it's just been replaced.
You can watch it on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
I've been on the original one many times, and now I'm at the age where I cannot go on it without having Dramamine first. Because otherwise it just ends with...
It's amazing how much that makes you feel like you're actually moving. But, yeah. But you know, I love the flashback. I love that we got Cito without them bringing Cito back. So it, you don't lose any of that emotional impact of her death, but she's still there. So that was cool. So, yes.
Yeah, that opening with the 13 years ago at Starfleet Academy flashback thing. You're like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, hey, that's like right next to Aaron's apartment. I've been there.
I see the top of that building every day when I go for a walk in the morning.
But it was a lot of fun to see Cadet Mariner. I always wanted to see flashbacks of these people. Like, I want to see them when they're like even younger. I want to know like what they were like in high school. Like, what was Boimler like going to school? Like, what was his relationship with like his parents and stuff? Like, I need to see Boimler's family someday.
Yeah, we haven't really seen anyone from his family.
We went to the raisin farm and we didn't meet any, like, we met like all those girls that worked there, but
that were throwing themselves at him, and he was just like oblivious. I don't think he was oblivious. I just think he didn't care. And so he just didn't respond in the way that they wanted.
This also gives us a rough idea of how old Mariner is.
Yes. So
the youngest she can be is 29, basically.
And it looks like she's a second year cadet. She's got like two stripes on her collar. So I think that...
So do we think that she joined when she was 16, or...
If she joined when she was 16, that'd make her 30 in this episode, I think. She'd be a year older than... Well, no, she's in the same class as Wesley, I guess, because they're both sophomores, so...
Oh, okay.
But he could be... You don't have to... Like, because he can join at, like, different ages. I don't know. You know, yeah, she had to be at least 16. So she's probably, like, at least 17 here 13 years ago. So, yeah, that'd make her 30.
That fits.
Yeah, that gives you time to, like, been around for the Dominion War and... I mean, like, you'd basically be like around the same age as a lot of people on like Voyager, like Tom Paris and Harry Kim. They were kind of like the same age as Wesley Crusher. Also, they were, they probably still like would have been in high school when TNG was on the air, you know, like Encounter at Farpoint was 7 years before Voyager. So, you know, Harry Kim, 7 years before that, he would have been like in eighth grade.
Oh, got it. OK. Yeah. I'm like, wait, are they watching their own show? I'm confused now.
I just try not to think about how old people are, because it doesn't really matter to me.
No. Yeah. Some people don't care about timelines. Well, people really care about it.
I think Tawny can pull off doing the different ages, though. That's why I appreciated the fact it's like, okay, she can be kind of timeless in a way.
Yeah. And it was cool getting like the original Cito actor, Shannon Phil, and like they really didn't. In fact, they could have had someone who probably sounded closer to her original voice if they did just any woman voice actor would be like, hey, can you do like a youthful voice for like a college aged person? And they'd be like, yeah, I can do that, easy breezy. So, but it was cool that they got her in there, and it was cool to have, you know, Will Wheaton as Wesley.
Wheaton
played it very different as
voice.
Yeah, he went like exaggerated, kind of like youthful instead of like. I liked that because it worked for Lower Decks, but it also made it stand so far apart from his Picard appearance last year in season two of that show. So,
where he came up as showed up as himself, essentially
as Traveler Wesley, who is very much like Ready Room Will host Wheaton. Will Wheaton.
Well, yeah. I feel like, you know, Just my personal opinion on this is that I know some people were like, well, his voice didn't crack while he was on TNG. He was on the frickin' flagship of Starfleet. Of course, he's not going to let his voice crack. He's going to be as dignified as possible. But now he's among peers at Starfleet Academy, and he's just being his own damn self. So just let it go, folks. You don't have to nitpick over things like that.
I don't think people were nitpicking over it. I just thought it was just fun to see. Oh, were they? Oh, okay. Like, I enjoyed seeing him do a voice that's like he's playing into the animated embodiment and everything. It just really it gave that Wesley a kind of a Lower Decks presence, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I appreciated that.
But I'm surprised that people. Oh, well, I shouldn't be surprised because people
never be
nitpick everything.
Never be surprised at nitpickers. And it's
just, also Star Trek. Nitpicking and Star Trek kind of go together.
Yeah, I just I'm just one of those people where. Most of the time, I mean, sometimes there are things where I'm like, ah, I can't get past this one thing. But 99.9% of the time, I'm like, I'm just enjoying it.
Yeah. It's also weird. They keep looking at this scene and like, I know what that bridge feels like to walk across it and stuff like that. It's very odd. Like,
I have walked across that bridge as well.
Yeah.
When they go across that bridge, they get the line from Cito that, covert starburst thing, whatever that is. I guess it's supposed to make us all be remembered as legends, but I feel like the only name anyone will be remembering is Locarno, and then that kind of comes back at the end of the episode to bookend it. But what do y'all think about when, I guess, we get to see Locarno explain, like, his whole fleet, his whole operation, the interior, like, the Nova One with no carpeting? He's bragging about, like, his total lack of Starfleet carpet.
And wood paneling.
Yeah, yeah. And the wood paneling.
I noticed that they painted all the ships. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I give them all a custom paint job.
That ship actually looks like the representation that was never used, I don't think, of V'ger from Sid Mead. It's got that sort of look to it, the outside part of it.
Oh, from the unused concept?
Yeah. I think they used it on the DVD menus or something. One of the versions of the like director's cut, I think.
Oh, shoot. I didn't even notice that. Now I got to pop that back in.
Because it has like, the electricity, through that little box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Didn't notice that. That's cool.
The inside looks very Kelvin universe in some ways.
And doesn't his chair look a lot like a throne to you? Mm-hmm. Is it just me?
It's also, it looks like it can be raised independently. It's got like a piston or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that. It shows he spends way too much time overthinking like his presentation. Like it's all very like egocentric, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's actually what killed him. His ego killed him.
When he makes his like declaration to the, I don't know, galaxy wide or quadrant wide, however wide it was, I loved the reactions of Rutherford and Boimler, which was one of the things I think that would have been Rachel's theory last week, but someone me and Aaron were talking to about like how are they going to handle Tom Paris and Locarno. They have to at least acknowledge it in some way. So I like this option. I like what they did. I didn't want we were trying to figure out like how do you make it work? Like are they secretly transporter clones? Are they like long lost twin brothers or something? And it's like Tom Paris spent 7 years on a show, like we watched 26 episodes a year with that dude, and he never talked about having a doppelganger. So it was like,
right.
There wasn't a good way to explain it. And I never liked the idea of like they're the same person with just a different name, because Locarno is always kind of more of a jerk than Tom Paris. Like Tom Paris never covered up the death of someone.
Yeah. They always say that you have a twin out there. Everybody has a twin somewhere. It's like that's, or a doppelganger. You know, it's like it could be that kind of thing. Or it's just like, oh, he looks an awful lot like him.
Yeah, I appreciate that the explanation is that there is no explanation.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, the explanation is sometimes in Star Trek, the same actor has played multiple characters.
And they shine a light on it, but still don't explain it, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah, Brock Peters is really good as Admiral Cartwright, and he's really good as Joseph Sisko, and that's fine. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Move on.
Dr. Pulaski looks an awful lot like somebody from the 23rd century.
Yeah.
I know, right? I seem to remember her showing up on the Enterprise, but, she had a different color hair. So, I guess you can change your hair color anytime you want in the future, but...
And I do wonder, like, the Trinars, I feel like they must be... I think that might be set up for something in season
like,
five.
Joel said, are the Trinars like polybinars?
Oh, is that their thing?
They're a throuple.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to get an explanation. I feel like they're a setup for season Could five, be, yeah. So, or, they're pretty advanced, so I don't know if they're going to be, like, formidable foes, or maybe they'll be good guys. Who knows? But I think they're going to do something with them.
Well, yeah, they were responsible for that shield.
Yeah.
And I like when they do the fleet-wide kind of montage thing, where it's cutting to, like, all the different people that are watching Locarno's broadcast. We see, like, some familiar ships, but we also see, like, some just, I don't know, some weirdo ship with weirdo people we've never seen before. It's just like, yeah, like, the Star Trek universe is huge. There's all kinds of people we've never met.
Yeah, and there was, what's her name? Oh, I can't remember her name. The one who was the archaeologist. Oh, we saw her on her ship.
Yeah, that's the one I always want to call Katniss Everdeen.
But, yeah, that one.
No, but it's Petra Aberdeen, not Katniss whatever her name is.
My brain said Tetra. I'm like, that's not right.
When Mariner is like, this guy sucks, you know, don't listen to him, he only cares about himself. I like that, like, she's like out of focus for like the camera had to like when she runs up to the camera and had to like re-find her and like refocus. It's like these auto-focusing cameras everyone on the internet is using.
That was
so
great.
That was really funny. That just made it feel so realistic.
Yeah, it was so spectacular.
And I love her mom's reaction.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she was very like, hell yeah. I knew girl. I could trust you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she basically just kicks the canister that the Genesis device is in, and she basically kicks it into Nick, grabs the Genesis device, and books it on out of there. And just, it was spectacular. Loved it.
The animation was really good. And we have like kind of that cool moment where it's a very Star Trek trope, I know, but the brass is like, oh, well, you can't do this. I'm ordering you to not engage. And then the captain is like, okay, Sarita's strong. We doing this to save Mariner. And then Boimler is like, all departments are saying, you know, like, yeah, we're good to go. Everyone is on board with saving Mariner. But I got to say, like, it is a very funny joke in Lower Decks. This might be like one of the funniest gags they ever pulled, in my opinion. They had a captain who is like, listen, when we break orders in Starfleet, you know, I know we're going to get in trouble and a court martial is guaranteed for all of us. Like, I was laughing my ass off when I heard that, because I was like, no, that never happens. Y'all are going to go save Mariner. And then the Admiral is going to be like, oh, well, I guess you did the right thing after all. And like, no one's going to get in trouble. And that's exactly what happened. But to be fair, I was kind of like rolling my eyes at it when we got to that part of the episode. But by the end, I feel like, okay, reestablishing diplomatic communications with the Orions, that actually is like a big enough win. That probably would get you a pass. So I was like, oh, they actually did like a little bit better job with this trope than I would have thought. So I should give them credit for it.
I love how much this season that Captain Freeman has become like the super competent captain, and just like finally, you know, letting her command style show through.
Yeah.
She's not trying to impress people as much. She's just like,
yeah. I appreciate that, and I, you know, basically Vassar was saying, you know, this is a diplomatic situation, they're not members of Starfleet, we can't do this, et cetera, et cetera. And she says, I'm not going to sit around and wait for politician to decide Mariner's fate. And I'm like, hell yes.
Yeah.
Hell yes. Thank you. Do what needs to be done.
It's just, this is where I started to have like a little bit of the problem with like with Nick Locarno's mission in the episode, where it's like, okay, like the show is showing me like, yeah, you can't always trust the establishment. You can't always trust the people in charge. Like sometimes you need to like go make your own choices and do the right thing anyways. So it's like, I feel like it's kind of at conflict with itself then at the end, when it's like, yeah, like I know like Starfleet messes up a lot, but like we still like need like this hierarchy system and we need to like follow orders and stuff like that. I thought it was kind of like a weird pairing to do both those of the same episode.
That's the beautiful dichotomy of Starfleet, though, because it's everybody basically accepting that there are rules and knowing when you need to break those rules, because rules do not apply to every single situation. Those rules, of course, have been established over centuries from experience, what's happened with encountering other races, other planets, etc. So yes, all of those things are guidelines as to, you know, mistakes that have happened in the past. But you can't judge every situation with that set of rules. That's why rules evolve, rules change, and sometimes rules have to be broken. And this is one of those instances.
Yeah, 100%. I like Jill's comment. Locarno is like the guy who peaked in high school and talks about his glory days for the rest of his life.
Oh my God, yes.
Oh yeah.
That's so perfect.
later when Mariner confronts him and is like, first off, you didn't graduate. When he's like, I graduated top of my class. I know how to disarm him. And she's like, no, you didn't even, like, you got kicked out. Like, you're not, yeah, you're not even, like, a dropout. You were, like, banished. You know, you're, like, even worse. Like, you're not even, like, last in the class. You're not even in the class, fool.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Brandy?
I was just saying, I love Mariner putting the Genesis device in a seat and putting a seatbelt on it. Where are those seatbelts all the rest of the time?
That's a good point. We've seen this bridge design. That's like kind of like the bridge I'm in. But it's like similar to the Enterprise D battle bridge.
Yeah, like, it very much reminded me of
my co-pilot. No exploding.
Yeah, it's just so awesome. Just keeps calling her GD. Has gendered her as a she. Girl, they are after you.
Yeah, he is obsessed with you.
And that just was great. I love that she did that, because that is the kind of thing that you do to keep yourself sane when you don't have a sounding board. So you become your own sounding board, but you project it onto another object. And the Genesis device was perfect.
Volleyball.
The volleyball. Exactly.
No, I have conversations with my dog all day long.
Oh, me and my cat. We have some amazing conversations. So yeah, I get that.
I like that she has the joystick too. From the
Everybody.
When you fly the ship by yourself, you get the joystick.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I don't know, like, how else you would pilot it from the captain's chair. So right. I'm glad that they thought about that to stick that in there. We've seen her do similar stuff before, like in the opener to season 2 when she was in the holodeck and she was escaping the Cardassians.
Oh, yeah.
Now we know why she hates the Cardassians so much, because they killed her her role model, Cito. Mm-hmm.
Father and I were talking about how the other Nova Squad person, Jean Hajar. It's like, I wonder if she had a hard time during the Dominion War, because it's not so much like Jem Hadar.
Yeah.
It's like every time she mentions her name, people get PTSD. Like,
Yeah. Jem Hadar, where?
Oh, the poor Jem Hadar. I feel so bad for them. They did not ask to become that.
No.
Yeah, I don't know what a happy ending for the Jem Hadar would be. It's like, you were all like engineered to be crackhead soldiers that no one will ever love or care about, but I don't know, we got you another job doing something else and to earn your narcotic you have to have to live. I don't know, it's just like, yeah, like being like genetically designed to be a Jem Hadar is just like, yeah, you're kind of just screwed. I don't know how to help them. I guess
I
we'd
imagine
have to, like,
lower decks, it would be like they become nannies or something like that.
Like, Bashir tried to cure them, and he was like, it's impossible. It's, like, built in, like, their DNA. There will never be a cure, is kind of his conclusion. But, I don't know. He didn't give up. He was still... Miles had to blast his stuff to get him to stop working, so...
Yeah.
Or maybe someday. Maybe one day a doctor will figure it out, Jem Hadar. I'm not gonna give up hope on y'all, so...
Yeah.
But maybe they should have, like, some Dominion people. They should have, like, some Jem Hadar who tried to, like, break free from the Dominion. You'd think that'd be, like, an easy place to find disgruntled lower deckers for Locarno's Nova fleet.
Yeah,
I did like the comment that Maquis would like to have a word when he talked about
the writer's room, like predicting the internet comments, like, mm-hmm. Okay, yep. This, like, some nerd will be like, well, the Maquis would like to have a word about that, so let's just go ahead and give that line to Boimler now.
Yes.
Well, they did in the crossover when he went to Strange New Worlds. He was basically having like all the fan reactions, like, I didn't know Spock and Chapel had a relationship before the original series. Like, all the things we were all saying, it was just
if
like, yeah, Boimler says the same
series
things.
You would have.
No. Yeah, Boimler, brush up on your TAS.
Yeah.
If TOS is those old scientists, we got to think of something for TAS. You know, those amazingly old scientists.
Well, we had an idea once for a time travel episode where they go into the era of TAS, and it was time anomaly syndrome. It's like, why does everything look so weird? It's like, oh, it's time anomaly syndrome. It happens when you time travel. In my head, I was like, they were drawn like TAS, which would have been fun. But
I like it.
I like that they pitted the Romulans and Ferengi against Mariner in kind of the chase, because I don't know, we're just kind of used to them as baddies. The ice ring, I think that looked really neat. And that was a different environment. It's a little bit like when Odo and the Weyoun clone were hiding from the Dominion in some ice. So we have the Orion mission to secure a warship to get through the Trinar shield. We check in with D'Erica, so I guess she's like head of the family now. She's running the fifth largest crime syndicate organization in the syndicate.
Yeah.
I wonder that she mentions like it's not a copy, not like borrowing a copy of Sword and Scabbard. So I assume that's one of the trashy Orion Hollow novels that that guy
Guns and Ammo.
Well, I was thinking like dude on DS9. I think his name was Lek. L-E-K? I might be thinking of a Ferengi. That sounds a bit Ferengi-ish.
I think that's a Ferengi, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Orion dude at DS9. But he was saying, like, I grew up in Ohio, and everything I know about Orion culture, I just learned from, like, the trashy Hollow novels with big boobs on the cover, so, you know, something like that. So I was like, was Sword and Scabbard one of those? But the trial by, or no, barter by combat. Very Orion. What an Orion idea.
I also like when Rutherford says, no can do, 10D2.
Yeah, that was a good line. That's a very, very, I don't know, Ruffy line. It's very Rutherford, yeah.
And she is the younger sister, so that fits.
Mm-hmm. 10D2, yeah. We've talked a lot about, Aaron and I have, how, like, Maglimo doesn't really, like, he hasn't done much on the show. They've really, like, shown a lot of these senior staff, you know, have like, their moments being, like, really good at their jobs. And, Maglimo, I guess, he almost has his moment to shine here. I thought it was actually funny when he still ends up losing the fight, but what did y'all think of his battle?
I thought it was hilarious. Because
anybody who has allergies knows that that's actually a really good defense.
It is. It really is. Because I do have allergies to certain things, and it can be completely debilitating to have an allergy attack of such kind. Just him fluffing. That was so funny.
Fluff, you're down. It's embarrassing.
Just do it. And then the block.
What made me crack up is when, like, because it takes him a while to figure it out, you know, it's like, finally, like, yo, dumbass Maglimo, he's like, oh, like, she's, like, sneezing and coughing, I can, like, okay, I got her now, and he, like, runs out and just starts punching, and, like, his punches do nothing to her, like, she doesn't, I don't even know if she notices.
Probably not.
But, it is sad, like, I like this, though, because I was like, oh, cool, I was wondering how Maglimo would win, and look, this cool way, he, like, puffed up, kind of like Dr. Phlox, but even funnier, so, you know, but then when she passes out on top of him and they lose, I was like, oh, what a heartbreaking development, I did not see this coming.
Yeah, we all thought that Maglimo was going to win after he fluffed him. Fluffed his down.
I don't know, sure why she won, just because she's on top of him, I guess, I don't know, it was like, she's really passed out.
Yeah, I guess because, like in wrestling, when like one wrestler pins the other wrestler, yeah. I think that's what. Yeah. I watched wrestling as a kid enough, I guess, that I didn't even question it.
Me either.
I just assumed those were the rules. Mm-hmm.
I do like that they still use the symbol from the animated series for the Orions, which is
so
cool.
I'm glad you bring that up, Aaron. I was about to ask you. I think the Orions or Orions,
Orion, yeah,
in the animated series, they might have been part of Tindy's family, or at least like in service to them.
Oh, that's interesting.
They had this banner, and they had like the same ship that picks her up at the end of the episode.
Same type of ship, yeah.
We've never seen that logo in Lower Decks, except for that guy who was working at the pirate base that they went
to
in season 2.
But also
two.
Was related to her,
right?
Like
his
cousin. Yeah, maybe it's a family crest. That would be interesting.
So I want, that could be like the Tindy symbol, and then there's the Orions might have been like they were either part of her family or they had been like employed by her family. Maybe, I don't know. Just a thought.
They're trying to pronounce that out there. It like the way that they did when, you know, like at the old home country or something like that.
I've thought about just like, I'm just going to be the jerk who just calls Orions and Star Trek Orions. And I'm like, there's no way I'd be able to like keep doing that. I'd like every time I'd be like Orion slave, Orion slave. I would just like stumble over myself nonstop. So I think that would be funny if someone did that. I mean, it's canonically acceptable.
It should be mentioned at some point or something. I thought they were going to use it with the guy from Ohio at some point. Ooh. You know, where he called it Orion or something like that. It's like, what?
Yeah. You know, real Orions like to say Orion.
Or yeah,
something like that. You know?
Yeah.
Sounds like them. But yeah, the heartbreaking development of to save Mariner, we must give up Tindy. So I think it'll be okay. I think within 2 episodes of season 5, I think she'll be back on the Cerritos. I might be wrong. But I think season 5, episode 3 will open and Tindy is already back on the Cerritos.
We need to clip this out and then play that back.
We can. Well, yeah, what do y'all think about that?
I figured it was going to be something that we were not going to like. basically, when they went to Orion in the first place. Because I thought, you know, we've seen what Erica's like, and she's not going to let anybody off easy, nor is she going to just be willing to help. And she has good reasons for it. She's in all these negotiations with other people, and she can't be seen colluding with the Federation and Starfleet. So I do enjoy the fact that she double crosses them in a very Orion-like way by giving them this ship that she promised they could borrow, and it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, that's a real jerk move. It's like, I get that, like, you want to show your Orion strength and, I don't know, shiftiness or whatever Orions take pride in. But, like, did you really have to, like, give your sister, like, the lamest warship that you had? Like, you couldn't find, like, something like at least, like, the engines worked on it or anything?
Well, they mentioned they needed the firepower. I mean, they literally did say that they needed a specific thing for that shield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel kind of like Erica is still kind of punishing Tendi a little bit, but also she cannot be seen as favoring even a family member in any kind of negotiation. So she kind of goes overboard in making it seem like she doesn't really care what's going to happen.
Okay. That's a real, like, you know, kind of political kind of, I don't know, pragmatic. That's a very, like, pragmatic move. I like that, though. It shows that she's kind of has, like, the cunning to be a
And the solution that Tendi came up with was very Tendi.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like, yeah, that's totally what she would be, selfless about it and offer herself up.
I did laugh at, like, Billups when he's kind of like Scotty, you know, here in the Enterprise, called a garbage skull or whatever. And Andy, shut up. Like,
I really love the looks on both Jack and Boimler. Like,
yeah, they're just like, oh, no, don't start this.
The Livick thing. What do y'all think of, like, the return of Livick, Rutherford's rival?
That's good. We thought that he'd come back. Yeah.
I thought he was going to be the disgruntled lower decker on the Cerritos who was going to try to. Before we knew it was Locarno, when it was just like the mystery ship going around, when we found out it was, you know, kind of teaming up with lower deckers on those ships, I thought, oh, Livick will betray the Cerritos. But I was wrong. Instead, he dressed up as Mark Twain.
The fact that it was to Lynn that presented the solution just cracks me up. And it just really cements that she has become a lower decker. She does not, she never belonged on that other ship, so-called a jerk. And so she's finally accepting that this is her place. These are her people.
Yeah, she's been a great addition to the show. I don't know.
Agreed.
I've praised her character pretty much like every episode she's been in. But it sounds like everyone's liked her. I haven't heard anyone be like, well, that's not true. I have seen some people say that, like, the addition of Talyn has led to, like, less Boimler stuff and, like, less, like, Boimler and Mariner kind of doing stuff together. I feel like Boimler is kind of like, he's kind of like Rutherford as far as, like, screen time. I feel like he used to be kind of more the focus or more like an equal to Mariner. And this season, I think that might have shifted a little bit to focus on Mariner. We talked to Mike McMahon earlier, and we're actually going to have, like, that interview next week when we do the season 4 show where we talk about the entire season. And it sounds like we have more Boimler coming in season 5. But yeah, I feel like, you know, like, Boimler and Rutherford weren't, even though, like, Talyn wasn't in every episode, I almost feel like Talyn kind of had, maybe just because everything she did was, like, new, we were seeing it for the first time, but I feel like she left a bigger impression this season than Rutherford or Boimler.
I think everybody could seem to have their episode, though. It's like, you know, we had Rutherford and Tendi in the
Ferengi
episode. Yeah.
Parth Ferengi's Heart Place.
There we go.
It's supposed,
I don't know who in the writer room is a Garth Marenghi's Dark Place fan, but I salute you.
Yeah, it was a reference just for, I don't know how many people watch that show, but
they're doing it just for you.
Yeah, well, I wasn't the only one. There are other people who know of it, but if you have not watched Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, I strongly suggest that you do so, especially if you like British comedy, and especially if you like Matt Berry. So it's just really, it's really good satire and makes me laugh on a regular basis. It's not, there was only one season of it, and so it's not a huge time investment. It can get kind of graphic as far as violence because, you know, it's based on like Stephen King's, what was it? Kingdom Hospital? Was that what it was?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's kind of a parody of that. And so weird stuff happens. And Garth Marenghi himself, of course, is the star of his show. And he's also a writer, you know, a horror writer. Basically, okay. He's aping Stephen King, but he's the biggest Mary Sue you have ever seen. It's so much fun. I think.
Do you know where it's streaming?
You can find it on Prime Video if you have Prime Video. I think that's the only place it is right now in the U.S., but I could be wrong on that.
Cool. Yeah, I hadn't heard about it until it was a joke in Lower Decks, but I'm curious now.
That's why I think it's so amazing, is that it's putting all these people who didn't know anything about Garth Marenghi's Dark Place and putting this in their path and going, hey, you should maybe watch this. It's pretty funny.
It'd be funny if that's how they just do all season 5. They just like, you haven't seen that's this. Right. Let's name this after that show.
Yeah. Well, the first time that I even looked at the title, I'm like, Garth Marenghi's Heart Place. Why does that sound? Oh, that was basically my reaction.
Like Jean Hajar.
Yep. Exactly.
That actually might have been where the real life creation of Jim Hadar came from. It might have been
funny.
The same person who thought up Jean Hajar. I can never remember her name, even though you just said it.
Hajar.
Like maybe the same person who thought up Jean Hajar was also the same person who thought up Jim Hadar. I don't know. But I think with like the dueling twins thing though, like if that's gonna be like a recurring joke, they maybe like should have. Well, I'll take that back. I was gonna say like maybe like they should have waited to like another season. But I feel like this like the last episode of the season had been like long enough. Like I kind of forgot about like the Mark Twain thing. You could bring it back, but I don't know if I would have done it like over like this like Livick and Rutherford. Like I'm not really sure what they were arguing about. Like the this is one technobabble way to reboot the systems. Like, no, it'd be a better technobabble way to do it this way. And
yeah, it felt like it was not used for the right purpose. I don't know. That was just.
But they need to use it again for like an argument that like it's actually like a big stake thing, and like the audience understands like this is option A, and this is very clearly option B as a different thing, and these two people are like in conflict about this. But then they go and do the Mark Twain thing. Like,
you would have had Riker and Data for like which way they're going to do the when the ship explodes when we turn them to spell.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like. Any Star Trek moral quandary typically ends with the convenient, like, oh, but we're so smart, we found a third option.
Yeah.
So you just do like the Mark Twain thing right before you get the third option thing, and you could do like the same format. But yeah, like, I think you can do like a big, like, you can do a big surprise payoff if you hold off on this joke and then bring it back at just the right time.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is that we don't know what the solution was that they agreed upon, the That's compromise. True. And my guess is that it's what we actually saw. They realized that neither of them had the right answer. And so the only answer was to hurl the ship at the shield.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess they didn't want to like blow the surprise of the, you know, the captain's yacht. And I do like that they kind of, they held off on that. And like, so, oh, Boimler's in the captain's chair. What? That's so cool. And like all of that stuff.
And if you notice when he's in the captain's chair, if you go back to season 2, A Spy Humongous, when he's pretending to be the captain in that improv space, he does the exact same movements and everything. It's so funny that it's like, okay, I've seen that before.
His captain training. He like, he retained all of that. That Except is so
just,
neat.
He just used the opposite arm. That was, I went back and did a screenshot, but yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the first time he like practiced that. He does. Yeah. I mean, like we know in the closets, he's like doing like pretend captain's logs. So,
I think he's not doing that as much anymore. Like practicing to be a captain, like the way he sits and stuff like that. I think he's learning how to be more in the moment and to just let things happen.
Yeah.
And I was so excited that he got picked to be acting captain because I am Boimler for one thing, and for another thing, this has been his quest since the beginning of the series.
Yep.
And now he's actually had his moment in that chair, and it just made me really happy.
Yeah. I like that, like, he didn't get, like, overwhelmed by it. Like, he was, like... Like, he was like, oh, no, I got this. I'm prepared for this.
Yeah.
This is what I've been training my whole life for this.
I did like at the end when, like, the ship gets bumped, he goes, ah! Just, like, does this really quick, like, thing where he just gets flung over. Like,
and yeah. You don't ever see him. He's still Boimler. He's yeah. still, you know, he's still going to be him, but.
Yeah. It was good physical comedy for animation.
Yeah. It's what I would have done. You know, ship gets hit, I fall down. Yeah. That would be me, because I am Boimler.
When Mariner goes into the Ion Storm, like, I think that's when I wanted to have, like, more of, like, an argument between Locarno and his, like, Nova fleet. I think I just wanted, like, one of them to be like, no, you're being, like, a selfish asshole, and no, I'm not gonna follow you. He gives up on them, like, pretty quick, though, and they won't listen to him, and he's, I guess I'll just have to do it myself kind of thing. But I like the conversation, the dialogue we get back and forth between mm-hmm. Locarno and Mariner. You know what that reminded me of? I just now thought of this, but even though, like, you know, visually we're kind of just watching a recreation of the Wrath of Khan, even like some like the same shots, but the much more interesting thing to me was the back and forth between the two of them. And I think it's kind of like in the other Star franchise, you know, a lot of times when they do their lightsaber battles, it's real, like, in some of the movies that make that more about, like, a conflict between, like, two characters, and the conversation that takes place during the fight is really more of the spotlight. Like, when I focus on that stuff here, like, I like it a lot more. When I, like, the Khan stuff was just, unfortunately, just Picard season 3 did so much Wrath of Khan types, yeah. Just, like, Star Trek Into Darkness tried to, I know that was 10 years ago, but still, it tried to kind of, like, retell the movie. It's like, we've seen a lot of Wrath of Khan stuff. Like, I don't know if we need more Mataara Nebula battles, but the conversation at least was really fun, just getting in both of their heads. What do y'all think?
I really liked it, and I knew Mariner was not going to give in at any point. She would die if she had to keep this device from getting back into his mm-hmm. possession.
Yeah.
And he, again, is just so full of himself that he can't see anything else. And he is so confident that he's going to win. He's going to get what he wants at all stages, that when people aren't agreeing with him, he just cuts them out. Because it's always been just the Nick Locarno show. There has never been any co-stars mm-hmm. in that show. It's yeah. just always the Nick Locarno show. And so, I appreciated the back and forth between them. And I think a lot of times Mariner, while being a little worried that she was going to be able to pull any of this off, was also just kind of like, oh, really? Just inside her head, just doing mental eye rolls a lot of the time, because he's
also like I barely knew you.
it's like,
we weren't friends.
And he's saying all this stuff like she was a member of Nova's flight.
Yeah.
She wasn't. And he just, this is what people with big egos do. They rewrite their own history.
Yes.
To make yep. themselves look better, to justify their own actions.
And they start to
remind me of a certain politician that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know.
Sure.
It never turns out well in the end, y'all. The bill always comes due. The bill always comes due.
And for half a second, I'm like, oh, he's not going to shoot her. No, he is, because he would totally do that. And, you know, had she not beamed out, she would have gotten zapped. So who knows if it was on stun or kill. But
when the Romulans didn't want to pursue her, he's like, oh, well, your Romulan captains you betrayed are going to be, you know, they're famously forgiving types of people, right? So, you know, they remind us there, like, yeah, this guy's like a good manipulator. Because, like, we saw him, like, doing it with Wes in the first duty.
Yep.
Mm. And, yeah, like, he keeps people, you get the impression he's a guy, he keeps people around, like, he views people as, like, is this person, like, gainful to me? Like, what, like, me having a relationship to them, like, what was that going to do for me? And then, like, when you're not, like, a convenience to them, then, yeah, you probably are quickly discarded.
He's charismatic, but he does not know how to lead.
Typical narcissist, really.
But I thought it was like a fun surprise that they, you know, we don't know exactly what the plan is, and we just figure it out when we see it. And, oh, they do something fun with the captain's yacht for maybe like the
we
first
rarely
time
see
ever.
People use that, though.
I mean, they used it to sing Gilbert and Sullivan in Star Trek Insurrection. So that some people might call that a fun use of the captain's yacht. But
it's rarely used. It isn't used that often.
Yeah. Lower Decks used it once before and then used it here, so it's like they've already used it. They've used the captain, I mean, before this, Star Trek Insurrection used it once, so they've now become the most captain's yacht usingest Star Trek thing. or whatever.
Why not use it? Like, yeah, it's a perfectly good ship.
Perfectly good ship. Yeah. Yeah. If I had a yacht, I'd use it. A captain's yacht, I guess.
A lot.
I'm assuming it's like supposed to be where she can also do smaller diplomatic missions where she goes down and it's more, you know, not a shuttle, but it's something that, I don't know. It just feels like that. It could be like that.
It's a super Star Trek idea for the captain and all the senior officers to go off on a side quest and like leave a lieutenant junior grade in command of the ship, though. That rang very true. That felt right.
Yeah.
And fun to see Boimler, of course. I saw someone say like there's a full grade lieutenant right behind him, but someone on the First Reaction stream said that last night, I think.
Oh.
But it's like, yeah, she's a full lieutenant, but like you don't have to leave the ship in command of that. Yeah, like you sometimes like someone with a like Worf and Data were both outranked by Crusher, but like they were frequently left in command of the Enterprise instead of her because they had the command training. So if that freaked anyone out, it's okay. Like you don't have to worry about that.
It didn't bother me at all. In fact, it made me think about episode one of the very first episode of the series and how Captain Freeman couldn't even get Boimler's name right back then.
Oh, he could barely walk on the bridge without having like an anxiety attack when like when Ransom's trying to talk to him. And he's like, Ensign, what are you doing here? And it's like, you know, he has like the weird like echoey sound effect. Like he can't like hear what's going on, you know?
Yeah. And then she basically asks him to spy on Mariner. And she still doesn't get his name right when he comes back and reports. And it's just, yeah.
Yeah. And now she's like, here, Brad, I'm gonna leave the ship. Here's the keys to the Cerritos. I'm leaving you in command, you know?
And they even have that nice little exchange. You know, it's like, you know, basically make sure you get home, you know? And she's like, you know, I plan on it.
The other reason why I think that the Trinar are set up for something is because they take the time to show us that they beam off of Locarno's ship. Like, they take time to make sure the audience knows, okay, the Trinars didn't blow up. They're still active players out there, so.
Yeah.
It has to be for something. Like, Section 31 Boimler's got to come back someday. And these Trinars got to come back.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that, because we know he's out there. We know William Boimler is still out there. They're just saving that up for another season. Because they don't show us stuff like that and then not pay it off. It may take them a season or two to pay it off, but they will pay it off.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things that we said. Is like, it's nice that they actually do remember those things. Like, compared to some shows that might pull that in and then just never see it again.
So. Yep.
Or like if they set up conspiracy bugs that take over Starfleet and then say like they're still out there somewhere. Maybe someday we'll cross their path again. Still waiting on them.
I feel like if anybody's gonna bring them back, it'll be Lower Decks.
I would
just
love
do
that.
One episode. Just bring back.
Yeah.
Just do an episode called like Loose Ends, and you start. You it opens.
That would
it
be
opens
great.
With like Gary games. Seven. Right at the beginning, it's like Gary Seven, like Assignment Earth, and it's like, I'm here to clean up all the loose ends, and it's just...
You know what I
that's
would
one
love?
Of them.
I would love what they should do, my thought anyway, they should make a new series of short treks and do all of these loose ends. Each one gets a short trek.
That would be cool.
That would be brilliant.
They wouldn't want us to tie up everything because people would want to have a story eventually one day.
Yeah, but you know, bring back the weird bugs and stuff. And honestly, when I as a kid, I remember that episode vividly. As an adult, when I go back and watch it, I'm like, good Lord, that was graphic for the time. Mm-hmm.
That was the first episode of Star Trek I ever watched. Ever.
Oh man.
Like, oh wow.
I knew Spock and Kirk just from like pop culture, but I never watched. Like I remember like seeing like stuff for Star Trek 4 on TV and being like, oh yeah, the dude with the ears and his friend, and they normally like work in space, and this is like a weird movie where they're walking around on Earth for some reason. So, but I didn't know much. But then like the next thing I saw like Star Trek after that was the episode Conspiracy, right at the part where they're trying to get like Riker to eat bugs. And I saw from there until like when him and Picard blow the dude up, and I'm like, this is the most insane, intense show I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't know how people can like watch this stuff. Like, I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack just thinking about this show. Like, what is going on?
And then you get one that's just him eating, drinking tea, and waiting
like
for his old girlfriend in the Paris Cafe.
was the only little kid going around like, man, Star Trek The Next Generation, that is an intense show. Like, oh, have you seen this thing?
Yeah, that's why you can't judge any series by one episode.
Yeah,
very exactly. True. Very true. But we can judge Nick Locarno as a fiendish murderer because he tells Mariner point blank, like, no, I am actually willing to kill you to save my, I don't know, Nova Fleet vanity project.
So. Yeah, that's it. It's ego above all else. That is a narcissist right there.
Yeah, he felt entitled to a perfect life. And but yeah, I guess there are a lot of people.
Yeah, it's entitlement.
Yeah, they feel cheated.
Yeah.
The Ferengi paywall gag, though, like, that was... I have complaints with some things in the second half of this episode, but the Ferengi paywall, I loved that so much. That was great. That was one of the best gags of the show.
Yeah, and it wasn't strips of Latinum. It was bars of Latinum.
Yeah.
Like, no, I know if you're trying to stop this thing from detonating, you're really going to want it to stop. So I'm asking you for a lot of money. This, like, highway robbery, like, no apologies. Like, I admit that I'm doing it, but, you know, like, you want to not blow up. I got you bent over a barrel, so you're going to pay up. Two bricks or you're gone.
Yeah.
There's one thing at the end that I have a little bit of an issue with, but we'll get to that, I'm sure.
No, let's talk about, like, our ending. We get, like, the big Wrath of Connie explosion. And then what do we have in the setup? Vasari's like, oh, we're going to have this Locarno planet now. His molecules are in there.
That's the thing that I have an issue with. It's like, Josh Albert's dad's going to have some words about that, I would feel like. It's like, naming it after him seems, well, one, it feels like maybe it's going to come back. Like, maybe we'll visit Locarno at some point in the future or whatever they called it. Was it Locarno?
Yeah,
or?
They called it Locarno, just Locarno. Yeah. And that it was going to be, you know, they were hoping to establish it as a sanctuary for refugees. And I'm like, wow. That's the antithesis of what he would want. I love it.
True.
I would hang out on Locarno. It looks like a cool green planet. But if they're worried about, you know, refugees, like, I hope, like, some Romulans, like, start relocating.
Oh, yeah.
Relocate over here.
Maybe that's what they were. Could that be a reference to that? Has that already started at that point? It could
be. But I mean, like, they've.
It's only like 3 years till Picard season one, right?
It's very muddy. It's a little bit. I know some people like don't care about timeline stuff, so this might be boring. But for people who do, like, it's weird because, like, some stuff's explained in the novels, which aren't canon. But the year 2381 is the year that this episode is in. And we know, like, at that point, Picard is already an admiral. He's off the Enterprise E and he is actively working on this project with the Romulans, but I guess it's not like public knowledge because, like, the Romulans are embarrassed that they're gonna have, like, their star go Nova, and so they don't want, like, their own people to freak out.
Yeah.
So it's like it's unknown, like, who knows and who doesn't know that that's happening. But it's kind of like y'all clearly didn't tell enough people if, like, not everyone evacuated. So
yeah.
Again, it sounds like a bit of an ego thing. You don't want to look weak, and so you don't tell the truth, and then a lot of people die.
I will say this, though. Here's an opportunity to promote Star Trek Prodigy. Hashtag we saved Star Trek Prodigy.
Yeah. But
Aaron Welke has promised that if there is a season 3 of that show, he would like to kind of have the Prodigy characters overlap more with some of the events leading up to Picard. So we actually might have an opportunity to clarify a lot of that stuff in a future season of Prodigy. So. Make sure everyone watches that when it hits Netflix, okay?
Yes.
So oh,
it is season 3.
I will so be watching that several times. Even if I can't actually, you know, watch it, I will have it on so that
just
it's
running.
Streaming,
yeah.
So that it's running, so that Netflix will know that this show is special and that people will support it.
I currently don't even have Netflix. It's like the only streaming service I feel like I don't have right now. But I will, when Prodigy is on there, I will sign up for whatever, like, their top 4K whatever plan for, like, the month that Prodigy arrives. I will do, like, whatever, like, their premium level is for at least 1 month. I'm not saying I'll stick around, but hey, if you were giving me, like, a new season of Prodigy every month, then maybe I would. So
I think Aaron Waltke would be very tired at that point.
Get some Red Bull in him.
Well, he's, no, he's staying awake with his child anyway, so like maybe he can just do it because he's awake.
Just yeah. Because he's awake doesn't mean he's cognizant.
No, I don't.
might not be the best stories, but we'll, right, we'll get, yeah, some scripts. Yeah.
Why is this all about childcare? I don't understand.
That's funny. There's a comic book artist. I kind of don't want to say his name because it turned out he was kind of a jerk and I don't want to promote his work. But a guy I used to be a fan of, and I was reading like a lot of his books, and he was working on like so many different titles at the same time. And I noticed like every storyline, there'd be like these characters like walking around talking about like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I'm like, why is Beast and X-Men talking about like, oh my God, I'm so tired? And it's like, oh, because this dude is really tired. He's writing this. But
that's funny.
And now people are going to be like, oh, who's the comic book writer father he doesn't like? Yeah, well, have fun investigating. But yeah, what else do we have at the ending? I guess, like, Mariner's back, yay, let's hug Mariner, but now Tindy is going to leave, boo, let's be sad.
I did like the chanting, it's like, we did that a lot. You know?
I needed that, though, because otherwise I was going to be like, yeah, this is the part where the show chants Lower Decks. So it's like, they're like, yes, you two have figured out our formula, but it would be unsatisfying if they didn't do that. So it's kind of like having your cake.
I thought it was cute, though, the way that he did that, yeah.
I did the same thing with like to Lynn doing like the rejection to Soquel. Like I think I said
her
that.
iPhone.
Brandy, I might have mentioned that when you were with us at the before the season. We were just talking about like the top five things we wanted. I think I might have said like to Lynn might even like at some point reject, you know, being called back to the Vulcans.
Agreed. Yeah.
We should go back and look at those predictions and talk about them next week.
We should do that before next week. That'll be fun. Yeah. But even though, like I said, like I thought this was coming, I was very satisfied when it happened. And when I have like a verbal like response, if I like laugh at something, like I try to like make a note of that. If I laugh out loud, or I said like F yeah out loud when it showed, just her hit ignore on her iPad. So that was that was cool. I loved it.
Yeah, that's the best revenge. It's like, oh no, you sent me here, and now I'm staying because, now everybody wants me. But guess what, baby. I'm home.
And it's something that that we also talked with Mike about today, Aaron, that will be in the interview next week. But I guess like a theme of characters unburdening themselves. And you mentioned Freeman no longer worried about trying to impress the brass, get a command of a better ship.
Yeah.
You know, she's unburdened herself from that. Look how much happier she is. Like a better leader, better mother, just generally like a more chill, cool, functional person.
Yeah.
So, and we see Talyn unburdened here. It's like, man, like I need to learn how to unburden myself. I need to learn some Lower Decks unburdening.
You just need somebody to script your life. That will take care of it.
Mike McMahon, come write my life. Yeah. Give me an arc with some development and then a satisfying conclusion.
Oh, if only it were that easy.
The Orion ship I mentioned, I knew when I saw that, I was like, oh, Aaron's going to like this. I liked it, too, as a ship nerd and also a TAS fan.
Yes.
Because it definitely looks more like the TAS ship in, or the ship in TAS than the first one that we saw did. Mm-hmm. They were obviously in the same lineage, but this one is like clearly much more like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love how little they changed on it. It's just like a...
And actually,
no, we're actually...
Interesting.
Yeah, it does. It's like, yeah, we're proud of this 1970s design. We're not embarrassed. We're not gonna try to alter it or pretend it's something else.
Well, for the most part, Bob actually designed some pretty cool stuff. You know, just like that he was able to do, you know, we don't have to think about like how is this gonna hold up as a model? Can the wing actually go out that far or whatever? You know, like you just draw it. So that was cool.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, that kid on Saturday morning ain't gonna care. Just draw something that looks cool.
Well, he also used to illustrate for the Navy and the Air Force. So it's like, I feel like he had some lineage, he had some knowledge of, you know, just ships in general. So
the Tindy and Rutherford hug, you know, they're very like tearful goodbye. Like they take time to like show like, you know, that's like that's a little bit of a more serious goodbye than with anyone else. So I'm still on the team hashtag Tinderford. But yeah, I want to see them in a romance together, like full on. I don't need them to be married with kids is what I keep saying. But like I want them to at least be boyfriend and girlfriend for at least like the last episode of the show, at the very least. But give me that someday.
Yeah, we've waited 4 years now, guys.
Brandy, me and Aaron took note of it. I'm sure you probably did too. But when Rutherford was telling everyone that him and Dr. T had a cave baby, did you notice like Tindy's reaction when she's like, "What? You had a baby with Dr. Tiana?"
Yeah, that was like way more intense than the other people. Yeah.
She was like way more invested with who Rutherford has babies with. Like she cared way more than they all cared, but Tindy definitely cared the most.
Yeah.
Oh, she's been displaying this behavior since forever, since like season one. But and we don't see it super often, but we did see it in what was the episode's name? Strange Energy, when Rutherford has lost his memory because his
yeah, when she didn't want him to go out with Barnes.
Yeah. And just that's exactly, you know, they're hugging and she says, and don't date Barnes. And he just has this look like, what? Yeah. So, yeah, that's been going on for ever.
Yeah.
And it's so cute, though, that neither one of them want to cross that bridge, that they're just so happy the way they are, that they're not even considering the fact that they are in a romance. They're just not doing the romance part yet.
Yeah. The show kind of, I don't know. Are they dancing around it, or are they like trying to like show it? Like, here, we're gonna like rub your face in it for a little bit, just to like let you know that we're aware of this too, but we're just not ready to do it. But
I mean, I appreciate that something they didn't going just on. Instantly put them together. I think this is more satisfying.
Mm-hmm. It is,
and realistic, honestly.
Yes. Brandy, will you say the Ferengi episode again?
Parth Ferengi's Heart Place.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That episode, like at first, like I was like really happy with it, because like, oh, the show is acknowledging, there's something there. There's a connection there. And then I was like, oh, is the show just being like, oh, but our solution to this is we're just gonna want them to be friends forever? But I'm like, no, they're clearly like gonna build up to something more, right? But like, I'm not convinced of that, so I'm always like asking other people, like I want like reassurance, like I just want someone like, yes, they're gonna get together, Father. You don't have to worry about this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, early on, people thought about Boimler and Mariner getting together. It's just like, you know, that.
Which I couldn't. I clearly could never now see that now.
No, not back then. I couldn't either. But like now, for sure not.
They're brother and sister. That's their dynamic.
I do wish for a suitable partner for Brad. I really do.
Yeah.
So, you know, because really he hasn't had that much luck in love. And, you know, his last girlfriend was actually in love with an alien that was in the back of his head, so it was just, you know, I just want everybody to be happy is basically what I want. So
did you see her, by the way, Brandy? And she appeared on screen for a blink and you miss it instant this season in the Gudgie episode of a few badgies more.
Mm-hmm. When
it showed the Vancouver,
yep, really really fast. I did notice. So I was like, was that Barb? Yeah. Anyway, they don't have to put it on screen. You know, I can write my own fan fiction.
Yeah. I'm so worried about them. Like, they have to know that they're right for each other. Like, they're not even real. Like, I don't know why I'm so worried about, like, them not finding each other. It's like, they're going to be okay. I mean, maybe they won't be, but it's...
Yeah.
They don't exist, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But these characters have become near and dear to us, and we are invested in them.
I care more about them than some people I know in my personal life, I guess.
I think they've done studies about that they're, you know, you, the part of your brain that you use with an actual person is the same thing that you do when you invest in a character or something like that. So it is very, very real.
I like this comment from Linda Marks. She says, I like slow burn, but I think they'll have to stop the dance and get them together at one point. And I agree, Linda. I like a slow burn too, but it's like, okay, at some point you gotta move to the next step. So
I really feel like they're going to do that this next season.
Yeah.
This time apart is going to show them the error of their dawdling, I guess.
I think some big things might happen in season 5, because we don't know how, like, how long the show is going to go, but it's possible final season next year. But I think just they were like promoting people to lieutenant now. It kind of shows like the show is confident. They're not afraid to like make changes. They're going to. You're kind of like the Strange New Worlds thing, like taking big swings. Like, we're not afraid of taking big swings. Like, I don't think Lower Decks is afraid either. And I think that they kind of established, I don't know, kind of like this comfortable space to work in the first couple seasons. And then in season 3, when they started like, you know, we're going to reference our own history as much as we reference other shows, kind of stuff like that. It really felt like it had kind of like become its own animal, found like its own identity. And I think that season 4 had more, I guess, you know, bold moves, game-changing moves than 3, so I think 5 will have even more than 4.
That's what I really loved about the flashback, or not the flashback, the kind of mirroring of Boimler pretending to be a captain in season 2. In this season, it's like, oh, you're referencing your own stuff, and it's like clear what that was about. So,
Or even, like, in season one in Veritas, when we saw, like, Tindy went on, like, that accidental secret Black Ops mission to Romulus and was, like, a freaking badass, you know, beating up the Tal Shiar and stuff. And we were like, how the hell did she do that? And it's like,
now we know.
Well, it's all explained now. So it's, you know, a lot of Mariner's behavior. It's like, well, if she hates being in Starfleet so much, why is she in Starfleet? It's like, well, just keep watching the show. Like, now we know. So,
yeah.
Gotten a lot of questions answered. So the ending is a lot of fun for me because that's another thing that matches up with the show's history. In the first episode, when Tindy arrives on the Cerritos, when Boimler's kind of giving her a tour, at one point we see her stare out like that back window of like their hallway that they slept in while the ship is at warp. And it looked very similar to how she looked on the Orion ship, you know, like leaving the Cerritos when it takes off at warp. And so it's like, oh, that's like a thing that she likes to do when she gets like a new ship, I guess, is look out like the back window. But it's like a cool little visual connection there.
They also got the red shift and blue shift correct, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's nice. Well, they do the best warp effect on Lower Decks out of any Star Trek show ever, which is kind of funny. Something like so visual like that, but the animated comedy got it better than all the other shows, in my opinion, though. But I like the warp effect here.
I love this determined look on her face, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that confidence of like you got this.
Yeah.
It was
Aaron,
you told me off mic, you told me that the ending kind of felt like a movie ending.
Yeah, it felt very cinematic, especially because we didn't just cut back to credits, you know, just and the music was not the standard music. Yeah,
I think that just having like a different end credit sequence than normal with like the, you know, the warp filled and then like the credits playing over that, and
we watched the very end thinking maybe music. There was a cut scene, but there was not.
Same.
Well, they gave us a post-credit scene last year with
with that's Badger. Why we're like,
okay. Yeah. But I don't know. I think that's everything I had on the episode. Do y'all have any final thoughts?
I'm just excited for next year.
Yep.
We like to end things with the Gorn eggs section of the show, where I go over the Easter eggs and jokes and continuity connections we thought were worth mentioning.
And apologies for not doing a Gorn egg video this week. I am just lucky to be sitting upright at this point.
But y'all saw the beautiful Orion ship, right? Like that's the animated series connection. So I suspect if there had been a video, that would have been something Orion ship.
No, actually, I would have done the thing about Brad and his stance, because we did the Orion ship sort of before already.
I was gonna say, like, we kind of already covered that, so yeah. I think you're good. But the stance is a good one. I like that.
Because it's a little more subtle.
I guess the use of Nova Squad was not very subtle. It was very like, look at all these familiar faces. But it was cool to finally see Josh Albert for the first time ever. So put a face to a name. But yeah, not featured in the episode was
Gene Hajar.
Hajar, okay. One of these days I'll get it.
And her actual name is... it was something, and now I don't remember. It's very interesting. Like Walker Brandt, that's what it is.
Oh yeah.
So her first name is Walker.
Well, we asked Mike McMahon a fun question today though about what was it like getting Shannon Phil back. So I guess we can talk about that next week in the come back next week, y'all, and in the Mike McMahon interview, and trying to find an actor who hasn't worked in the industry since 1995. And that was interesting to talk to him about. So, and thank you, Rachel, for suggesting that.
Yeah, question. That was a great question.
He seemed to have like a lot of fun talking about that too. So, be sure that you come back next week. But Will Wheaton as Wesley, of course, Robert Duncan McNeil, his second time on Lower Decks. So that was fun. And if you pay attention, you do see. I think we said you see Gene Hajar. Did I do it?
Yep. That's correct.
Awesome. Okay. you do see her like running away from the group. Like,
she waves she's and like, then just, yeah.
Yeah, maybe she's like running late to class or something. But also
a Boothby-esque.
Eagle-eyed viewers might spot a Boothby doing some gardening next to a Cation.
We tried to figure out if the other two people were anybody we knew, but they're just background extras, we think.
Mm-hmm.
Cool to see Boothby on screen for, I guess, like the first time since Voyager, and you can debate if that counts or not because it's not like real Boothby. But Mariner, Cadet Mariner, she's all like cute and excited and all like wanted to nerd out about all the cool Star Trek stuff, like Zindi and Preservers. They both got mentioned. You know, the Preservers, they alien abducted a bunch of Native Americans one time, and the Zindi blew up Florida. Star Trek is weird.
Yeah.
I like to use the Xeno history. That's hard to say. Xeno history. Like, you seem to be doing fine with it. It doesn't,
yeah.
It doesn't
seem like there's a lot of weirder hard. Words in your universe than yeah. that one.
Yeah. Like xenoanthropology. That's a mouthful, but it's yeah. still, I can say it.
I was happy to see Petra Aberdeen back on the Free Spirit. Yeah. And I guess it takes two people to replace Mariner because she has two people on her ship now instead of just one. So
that makes sense, actually.
Yeah. And, like the dude on the ship, I think he's a Vulcan. He kind of looks like he has like some Vulcan eyebrow and some
maybe, yeah.
pointed ear action. Mm-hmm. Maybe like he has like a little bit of like a weird Vulcan braided ponytail under a bowl haircut. He's like a Vulcan bad boy, I guess. Vulcan bad boy archaeologist.
That would be an interesting Indiana Jones movie to see.
And we saw the towel guy. version of a
Temerian,
yeah, the Temerians. But I think we saw that before, didn't we see the or no, I'm thinking of Klingon Tal guy.
No, we saw Klingon guy,
Wage
yeah.
Douge. Okay, this is a new Tal guy. So there's a and Big Merp is sometimes in a Tal. So there's a collection of Tal men from various different planets. So that's who the Trinar are going to team up with is the Tal men.
The Tal men.
Here's my question: why a Tal? Why not a robe?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, why not just, like, walk around just totally nude? And
no, I don't want to see anybody's genitals. I'm just saying that you don't use a towel to dry off from a sonic shower, so why yeah. not wear a robe?
Well, even Boimler is just like, it smells musty in here or whatever, it's like, which doesn't make a lot of sense or, because it's, you know, they're sonic showers.
Yeah.
Or steamy or whatever he said.
I guess yeah. because, like, Fedorov, he's the Cerritos Tal guy, so we'll pick on him, we'll pick on Fedorov. But, like, you clearly want to get people's attention, so you're like, oh, I'm gonna, like, show off, like, how sexy I am by walking around with this towel, and people are gonna be, like, so worried, like, oh, is the towel gonna fall off of him? So they're all gonna be staring at me, you know, worried the towel will fall off at any minute, so.
Yeah, you don't have to dry yourself after a sonic shower, I'm assuming.
So all of these towel men are just really attention whores.
Yeah, because you see plenty of people go into that same sonic shower with a robe on.
Yeah, yeah, so you're only doing it with a towel if you want to get attention. So
yep, I think okay. that's. I think we've solved it. We've
cracked solved the it. Code. Yeah, like I know Mike McMahon keeps apologizing to like Enterprise fans for not having like enough. He's like, it's hard to get 22nd century stuff in there, but like we have some cool like Enterprise Andorian style aesthetics on that Andorian crew. The Saber class runner ship, the USS Pissarro.
Yes, which is actually named after
Fabio Pissarro.
Fabio Pissarro, who worked on the Eagle Moss ships. I think he was a CGI dude. Was he doing like some of the models?
I think so. Yeah. He was like rebuilding some of the ones that weren't up to spec for creating models out of.
Okay. So yeah, he's like upscaling like the existing, I think he took like the ILM models and he did whatever to make them good enough quality to be used for like the modern,
which is hilarious to think. It's like they have to fix an ILM model to make it more high def, you know. It's like that just seems odd.
Yeah, just what do you call it, Moore's law and computer power and all that over time.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was a cool tribute. He sadly like passed away. I think it was cancer, but it sounded like it was like, you know, pretty rapid, real tragic, just last year. It was like a year ago when he died. They named the ship after him, and they gave it the NCC 52670 registry because his birthday was May 26, 1970. So really awesome tribute. I thought that was like really really cool. The people up at Titmouse did a good job on the ship. It looked beautiful, and I think it's like someone who's like a big ship nerd, if that was like his life's work, his life's passion, I think there could probably not be a finer tribute. And it was based on the Steam Runner class, but to make the scales work, they said it's the size of a Saber class, so we're just going to call it the Saber Runner. So it's fine. Scales have been weird in Star Trek before. We've had to do this before to explain Birds of Prey, that whole thing. So yeah, it's fine. Moving on. We got some new Ferengi rules of acquisition. So both are new additions. Oh, yeah. I actually looked in the book, in Ira's book, to see if they were in here. Before, let me double check. No, 91 is not in here. And what was the other one? 289. So yeah, neither. So these are both new, but we got 91. Your boss is only worth what he pays you. That one I agree with. That is true. And 289, shoot first, count profits later. I would say stun first, but yeah, so that's all I got on the Gornags, but we're going to have a lot of fun, I think, next week, just talking about, like, the entire season. Brandy, can Aaron and I invite you to come over again next week if you want to talk about, like, all of season four as a whole? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm totally in.
And awesome. I got a text message earlier today from our friend Jesse Gender, who said she will also be joining.
Oh, good.
Yay. It's going to be a fun crowd. And Aaron and I have our interview with Mike McMahon in the can, so...
Mike McMahon's in the can.
We got McMahon in a can, y'all. But we also have Brandy and Jesse Gender. So
yes.
So yeah, it'll be a great time. Please come back. Hit subscribe if you're not subscribed because you don't want to miss that. So all that stuff. Ring that bell. All that stuff. Subscribe on the. Oh, this is really important, y'all. If you're listening to the podcast, if you're listening to Drawn to Trek, you need to make sure that you're subscribed to Text Trek. And if you're listening to Text Trek, you need to make sure that you're subscribed to Drawn to Trek, because we're not always going to like overlap. We're going to have weeks where it's like we combined
our forces for Lower Decks, and then we're going to kind of split.
We're going to sauce or separate.
Yeah, that's it.
So we're going to like Prometheus separate. We're going to shoot. We might have like multiple captains yachts that shoot out. We might have like a first officer's yacht. We might have like a engineer's yacht. You know, we have like a chief medical officer's motorbike. We have like all kinds of vehicles you have not even thought of thinking of yet. So
that's the Lower Decks rowboat.
Yeah. Chief Lundy gets the rowboat. So
yeah.
Ooh.
And Honus the bartender, we'll reveal his vehicle next week as well. another tease. But please come back. It's going to be a lot of fun. Y'all were a great audience for another season of Star Trek, and we got a lot of Trek to talk about next year too, with Discovery and Strange New Worlds and Prodigy and all kinds of stuff. So.
Oh, we're not getting Strange New Worlds next year. That's not going to happen.
Probably be. Well, it'll go into production, and then like I'll be able to like I can talk about. We'll probably get like a trailer or something we can talk about. There'll be something Strange New Worlds we'll talk about.
But it takes 9 months to do the digital effects on one episode. So we're not going to see anything new from Strange New Worlds in 2024.
If they started shooting this year, we might get like, it might be like Strange New Worlds season 3, like coming at Christmas or something like that. Would be like, that would be like best case scenario. If like the strike ended today.
Yeah.
We might get like an episode out like right before Christmas. So yeah, it's probably not happening, but that's okay. We got a lot of
spend more time with
about.
Books and comics and stuff. Dive into that stuff.
I get all the Star Trek comics, so yeah.
We are still talking about doing on Drawn to Trek at some point a play along of the Star Trek Adventures animated series module that I worked on.
Ooh, nice.
So that would
very
be
very nice.
We got a lot of stuff in the kitchen. We'll talk about that in the near future, but all of Lower Decks season 4 next week will be discussed. And like I was mentioning, Mike McMahon, Jesse Gender, Brandy's coming back, so it'll be a lot of fun. You should be there too. And until then, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the Text Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek. And follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you and take care.